Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason.
And I'm Barbara Glickstein.
Health Styles is brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Today on Health Styles, we are bringing to you the last of a four-part series on healthcare decision-making around end-of-life decisions. The first program focused on why this conversation, why talking about these issues is so important. The second program focused on how to have conversations with your loved ones about your wishes around end-of-life care. And the third one actually walked you through how to complete a healthcare proxy form. And a healthcare proxy is somebody who you would designate legally to make healthcare decisions if you were unable to make them. On this last segment, we're going to just review what some of the other legal documents are and words that you may hear, such as living will, such as DNR, or do not resuscitate, and some other language that you'll hear around end-of-life decision-making and planning. And we're going to sort of wrap this up about how do we continue this conversation. And I'm very pleased that with us again, with us throughout this series, are two very special guests. We have Tina Jansen Spinoza, staff attorney at New York Legal Assistance Group, where she is program coordinator for Total Life Choices, a program to disseminate information about end-of-life planning and help people with this planning. Thank you for rejoining us, Tina.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have Dr. Vedette Todaro-Franceschi, a registered nurse and professor of nursing at Hunter College, City University of New York, where she teaches courses on death and end-of-life care. Vedette, thank you for coming back onto Health
Thank
Styles.
You for inviting me.
Diana, before we keep going, I just want to let everybody know who may have not had a chance to listen to the first three segments that those podcasts are available by going to HealthCetera, the center's blog, at centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. But stay tuned and listen to today's program because this is really important as well and will help continue to frame the conversation that we want you to have with yourself and then with your loved ones and in community, which is what WBAI is all about.
So to have this start off today's conversation, what I'd like to do, Tina, is have you give us sort of an overview of some of the other legal documents that get thrown, the terms that get thrown around. So we talked last time about how to complete a healthcare proxy form that actually enables you to designate somebody to make decisions for you about your healthcare if you're unable to make those decisions. But you also hear about living wills, about last will and testimony, durable power of attorney, and DNR orders. So can you give us a quick sort of overview, or what are the various forms that people might be told to think about, and what's the difference between them?
So what I would suggest is that we actually talk first only about documents that would concern our healthcare. So, and yes, there are quite a few of them out there, and they get confusing. I would say that the first one that we can discuss is maybe the DNR, the Do Not Resuscitate Order. So the DNR is basically, and Vedette, jump in whenever you feel ready, but the DNR is basically an order that would state that if my heart stops beating, that I do not want mechanical...
You do not want resuscitation.
Resuscitation.
Right.
Yes, I don't want anybody to start my heart again. And that is all that it covers. It doesn't, because I have often people who say, well, you know, what about the artificial nutrition and hydration? What about something else? I signed a DNR. I don't know where it is. And it all gets very, very confusing. Mm-hmm. And do I need a DNR? For the DNR, what's going to happen, if you're in New York, most likely the physicians at the hospital where you are at are going to come and speak to you about obtaining a DNR, or you can call a doctor in and discuss the DNR. You can also have an out-of-hospital DNR if you are in a specific medical situation, and that needs to be signed every 90 days by your treating physician. So I would say that for the DNR, don't worry about it too much, because should you need one, it will probably be offered to you. Somebody's going to come and talk to you about
it. So that is not, I'm going to take issue with that, because Vedette Todaro, Franceschi, and I as nurses both know that in hospitals, people who do not want to be resuscitated are being resuscitated all the time.
Right.
So for us, there's a different sort of inside perspective on this. So Vedette, what would you advise people to do around DNRs?
I think they have to spell it out. They have to have the talk. It has to be part of this whole...
And not wait for the talk to be initiated by somebody else.
Advanced care planning talk. They have to have that talk. When you begin to think about who you're going to assign as a healthcare proxy agent, you should be having a discussion about what it is you will want and what you will not want. Okay? And, you know, there are instances where people with life-threatening illnesses who are expected perhaps to recover would want DNR, but there are many, many people who have a slow decline with chronic illness who may not want a DNR. So it's important when you begin to have the discussion on advanced care planning that you talk about whether or not you're going to want DNR and spell it out. Okay, and that's the next form that you're probably going to talk to speak about, the living will. But let me just say this in terms of DNR, do not resuscitate doesn't necessarily mean mechanical, it also means chemical. And you can request that you be, you can request that you only receive mechanical support in the event that you were to arrest. And so you would get cardiopulmonary resuscitation, but without medications. There's lots more to it than the basic do not resuscitate that physicians don't normally walk in the door and speak with people about, because again, it sets up people for fear. They're afraid. Okay, and it's a conversation that we need to have while we're well, not when we're in
the
hospital.
No, I agree that we have to have the conversation with our healthcare agent, no doubt about it. But we were just talking about the different forms that are out there, and there is a specific DNR form. And we said earlier, anybody over the age of 18, fill out your healthcare proxy, have the conversation. Absolutely, right. And it should cover. It should definitely cover, should your heart stop beating if you're in a terminal irreversible situation, your quality of life and all these things. But right now, I was just talking about the other forms that were out there. There is a in-hospital DNR form, and there's an out-of-hospital DNR form. So if you are in a terminal irreversible situation, you can ask about it, ask a physician about it or a nurse.
Yes.
If they don't come and offer it to you, I have actually had patients or clients, and they told me that the doctors came to them and discussed the DNR form with them. So I thought that was common procedure. But I guess they were just lucky about that.
Yes. So what's a living will then?
So a living will is a little bit different, and a living will in New York, there are various types of living wills. We have one up on our website at totallifechoices.org. And a living will is a way to state that if I am currently actively dying, that I do not want the doctors to prolong my dying process. And the one that we have online basically asks for patients to initial a certain amount of boxes. And taken as a whole, it basically means, once they've initialed all those boxes, it basically means, let me die in peace, but give me a maximum amount of pain relief.
Why do I even need that?
Living well.
If I've got a healthcare proxy, so I have somebody to make the decision on my behalf, and I've had that conversation with my healthcare proxy, to make that decision on my behalf and act in my interests if I'm incapacitated. But if I'm not incapacitated, I can just refuse treatment, can't I?
Right. Well, all family situations and family dynamics are different. I have had some people who, for instance, spouses, one spouse appointed the other and the other appointed the first spouse. And they said, what happens if we're in a common accident? I want to make sure that my wishes will be written down. I have had some other people who said, I really don't trust anyone. Mm. And I want to make sure that the doctors don't keep me alive. What we also need to take into consideration is if you do not have anybody that you trust, to be your healthcare agent, and you're in a hospital or a nursing facility, the Family Healthcare Decisions Act is going to state who is allowed to make medical decisions on your behalf and who's allowed to take a look at your medical records as well to make those decisions. So if you decided that there's nobody that you trust, and if you did a living will, well, in that situation, so in other words, you don't have a healthcare proxy, but you do have a living will, you're in a hospital. In that situation, the person who is listed on the Family Healthcare Decisions Act will step in to make medical decisions for you.
But has to follow your directives.
But will follow the living will.
Oh, good.
If they know it exists and they know where it is.
And again, and that is the big issue. You need to make sure that these documents are retrievable. Yes, and that's why we had discussed earlier registering them with the U.S. Living Will Registry. You can get more information about that on totallifechoices.org or give me a call at 212-613-5062.
And make sure your healthcare provider has them. Put them on the refrigerator. Put them behind the door. Give them to your neighbor. Yes.
Good.
And now if we keep on going a little bit, there's another form that's out there and that people have been discussing quite a bit because they're also confused, which is the MULST or PULST form. And that is a hot pink form. And the reason why...
Let's just say what it stands for.
What it stands for, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Medical order for life-sustaining treatment or physician orders for life-sustaining treatment.
Just because we didn't have enough fruit that we wanted
right.
you to remember, listeners, we're adding this next form. But
right.
it's really, you know, with all seriousness, although this may feel a little overwhelming, which we hope it isn't, the purpose of our having this discussion about the different types of ways you can ensure that you're empowered by empowering others to speak on your behalf, that you have some options. But ultimately, this four-part series was to get every single listener to sign a healthcare proxy form. And that's why in the month of April, what we're hoping to do in our series is to get you to do that. This is Health Styles, and we're talking about healthcare decisions. Our guests today are Tina Jansen Spinoza, the staff attorney at New York Legal Assistance Group, where she's the program coordinator for Total Life Choices, a program to disseminate information about end of life and help you plan that. And also Dr. Vidette Todera-Franceschi, who is a registered nurse and a professor of nursing at Hunter College City University of New York, with many years of expertise and scholarly work around the issue of death and dying.
So, Tina, continue with the
so
MULST.
We're talking about the MULST and the PULST form. Now, actually, the...
the MULST is with the PULST.
So, the PULST form is actually physician orders for life-sustaining treatment, which is more apparently the national name, whereas MULST is more the New York name. But the MULST form is usually for patients that have serious health conditions, so a terminal illness or a progressive chronic illness, and it is completed with a physician, and it takes some time. It's a two-sided, two-piece hot pink form, and it takes quite a bit of time to complete because there are a lot of questions in terms of what kind of treatment would you want or not want at the end of your life.
And this form goes with you wherever you go.
Yes. It follows your hospital bed or your nursing home or your hospice bed.
It's community-wide. It follows you wherever you go, into the community, back into the
hospital.
So
for home care, it would work.
Home care, it follows you through the community. So it's a community-wide form. I think the most important part about this form is the fact that it's really the physicians or the healthcare provider, the healthcare professionals are honoring people's wishes, and that's what they mean to do with this form. And that's why there's so many questions they're asking, because they really want to get a sense of what is it this person wants the quality of life is changing and as they're approaching death.
So just to help our listeners understand, when you say it follows you, Where does it follow you? Is it a piece of paper? Is it on an electronic medical record? Is it on a wallet-sized card? How do you imagine this being followed with the person who completed it?
In New York State, it's going to become an electronic part of the electronic record, and probably in other states that have adopted the form. And they're going to be calling it, as another name, the eMOST. And the eMOST will be the electronic version that will follow people around. But right now, when they put this together, wherever the patient goes, in other words, if they're in the nursing home or if they have home care, that MOST is a part of their patient record.
And the fact that it follows you, meaning that all settings have to respect it.
Right. And that they're going to honor your wishes.
Yes.
So we've been talking about having a healthcare proxy form as being the gold standard or the platinum standard. Where does this fit in, and does this reinforce that which you've already discussed, or is this a more in-depth kind of conversation to have with your primary provider that will allow for more of this conversation to help shift the culture and help us understand? Is it a new document because the healthcare system said we need yet another form?
It's, or the document's been around probably now at least half a decade, maybe more. And it's been slowly gaining momentum as we talk about healthcare decisions at the end of life. I think that it's complementary, and they're different things. Like Tina said, this is really for people who have chronic illnesses that expect a decline in their healthcare status, or for people who are in a terminal phase, as opposed to the healthy adult who needs to consider that anything can happen at any point in time.
But it's a very good question, Barbara. And actually, in California, they did a major push through at least one foundation in California, a California Healthcare Foundation. They were using this form actually to try to spur the conversations, because we have the research showing the physicians, and it's why, Tina, when you said about, you know, the physician's going to walk into your, could walk into your room and initiate this conversation on DNR, we know that physicians do not, by and large, initiate those conversations and avoid those conversations. Now, medicine is trying to do work on this, but the pulsed form, the physician orders for life-sustaining treatment, was actually started, I think, as a way to try to push and require those conversations to happen. Or to not require them, but to really push those conversations to take place.
Kind of like what our radio program is trying to do for our listeners who've been tuning in the last 4 weeks around the importance of making healthcare decisions. It may be this moment where you've decided to have that conversation, and we're thrilled. And these are the ways that we're sparking and seeding the necessity for each one of us to fill out our healthcare proxy form, to perhaps fill out a living will, think about DNR. And how do we have these conversations? We do it because we start them. And that's what we're doing here on WBAI on Health Styles.
So let me go back to Tina Jansen-Spinoza. What is then, what about a durable power of attorney? Does that enter into this conversation at all?
Into medical decision making? No.
Okay.
Not at all.
What about last will and testament?
No.
Good.
Because we're done.
Good. We're done.
We're done.
You can rip up those forms if you're listening.
No. These all of these documents start with a conversation and with your thinking about who you trust. Once you have done that, you have documents that are alive while you are alive, and those are the documents that concern your medical treatment, that concern also your finances. So, for instance, a power of attorney in New York is a document that allows you to choose somebody that you trust 100%, not 99.9%, 100%, to be able to step into your shoes regarding financial matters. It's a wonderful document because, again, tomorrow I can get hit by a bus and be in the hospital for 2 or 3 months. Who is going to step into my shoes to take care of my banking transactions or take care of other things that I normally pay or do or advocate or whatnot? Well, if I have a power of attorney set up in place, well, my agent under the power of attorney would be able to do that for me. Then there are documents that take effect after my death, and that would be organ and tissue donation. My tidbit about organ and tissue donation, it's again a very personal decision. It's something that needs to be discussed with your loved ones. But if you are so inclined to donate, please do so, because we are lacking organs. There are people dying every day for lack of organs. If it is not your wish to donate, then don't. But if it is, definitely take that affirmative step and fill out the documents, which can also be found on totallifechoices.org. The other thing that takes effect after our death is a last will and testament. The last will and testament is a document that allows you to state who is going to get your belongings after your death. In New York, the only person that you cannot disinherit is your spouse. You need to consult. You need to consult with an attorney for the power of attorney and the last will and testament. Do not download forms from the web. Do not pay for the forms on the web or at your local stationery shop. I have never seen a homemade will that actually was done in the formalities required by the law, which means that basically you died intestate, which means without a will. So New York State law decides who gets what of your belongings.
What about people who can't afford an attorney?
Well, we provide the service for free in New York.
Right. And so we
New York Legal Assistance Group, Total Life Choices. So, yes, we do provide for free these documents, the power of attorney, obviously the healthcare proxy that we've discussed at length, the registration, the last will and testament. We do these documents for free.
Do you have to prove that you financially can't afford to hire your own attorney?
Yes, we do. We do ask for income and asset. We do follow certain guidelines, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. We need to make sure, because we receive funding to help people that cannot afford. And the last thing is that you might want to think about is also an appointment of agent to control disposition of remains. And that would be somebody who would be in charge of your funeral, burial, cremation, etc. And you can pick that person.
Right. So let me just, we only have a couple minutes left, and this is the end of this four-part series on having conversations about how we're living before we die and making sure that we have our wishes about how we die respected as much as possible. So, and we've been very fortunate to have with us for the whole series, and I'm quite appreciative of this, Tina Jansen Spinoza, the staff attorney at New York Legal Assistance Group, where she is the program coordinator for Total Life Choices. And Tina, thank you so much for being with us for this series. For people who want more information about this, how do they get more information? What do you recommend?
I would recommend that they go onto their computers and get more information, see what stories are out there, but do not act on it. Just get the information. I would say if you qualify for our services, you can actually definitely call us up. The number is 212-613-5062. That is my number.
More time.
212-613-5062. And
the website again?
TotalLifeChoices.org. And so just get information. If you feel that you need to hire a private attorney because you know that you would not qualify for our services, you definitely want to go in there well informed from what you've read, of what you've heard. You want to make sure that when you leave that attorney's office after signing documents, that you feel that a weight has been lifted from your shoulders. You should feel that you understand everything that is in your document. You should be able to wake up at 3:00 in the morning, read your documents, and understand what they say. So you should feel better after completing these documents. I would also highly recommend that you negotiate a flat fee with any private attorney that you go seek out, and that you make sure that this attorney only practices in the area of estates. So basically somebody who does wills, trusts, last wills and testaments, powers of attorney, not somebody who does everything under the sun and who also says, oh yeah, I can do a will for you. Because it is really an area, because all of these documents take effect most of the time when we cannot communicate.
Thank you so much, Tina, for sharing that perspective and that important information. And Vedette Todera-Franceschi, your professor of nursing at Hunter College City University of New York, what final words do you have to share with our listeners about these conversations?
To begin the talk, even if it's awkward, to start having the talk amongst yourselves, with friends, with loved ones. And if you can't find information and you don't have access to a computer, the public library does a good job of having lots of stuff. Right. I also highly recommend the New York Times for end-of-life care stories that really display the picture of what's going on in healthcare related to end-of-life, and that can start a conversation, too. That can be a conversation starting point to read about things that are going on in actual healthcare systems.
And for more information, the
caringinfo.org.
Caringinfo.org?
Yes.
Great. And how can people find out more about your work?
Google me.
Okay. All right. And that name is Vedette Todera-Franceschi, F-R-A-N-C-E-S-C-H-I, right? Todero, T-O-D-A-R-O. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers with Health Styles, and I'm really hoping that our listeners will continue this conversation. Barbara and I have frequent conversations about this topic and believe that it's really important for us to change how our society thinks about and is willing to act on the issues around the fact that we all are going to die, and to make the most of this life transition.
And I'm Barbara Glickstein, the other co-host and co-producer of Health Styles. And something that Tina said, I want to reiterate, I recently lost my dad, and had these documents and these conversations not had happened, the passing of his life would have been so much less intimate, loving, caring, and surrounded by his family with the trust that he imparted on his healthcare proxy and his family, that instead of worrying about all of these things, we were able to be present and with him. So if you want to give a gift to those who you love who are living, take care of business. Fill out that healthcare proxy form. It will motivate you to have a tough conversation and have that moment of relief that Tina mentioned. It is a gift that you are giving to those who you love and to yourself foremost. So take the leap. And like that driver's license that maybe you still should get, fill out your healthcare proxy form.
And to listen to the entire series, go to our website, www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. We will have those on the website. You can listen to the whole series. You can listen to it with your loved ones and have that spark the conversation. I'm Diana Mason. I want to thank you on behalf of Health Styles and our guests and my colleague Barbara Glickstein for tuning into this series. You've been listening to Health Styles, and we are brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, again, City University of New York, www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com.